Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson. Welcome to the second hour of the Sunday Spin on this cold January morning. I was out on the WGN Storm Center patio and a little bit of white stuff kind of trickling down. Nothing major, but there is a possibility of some snow showers today, so just be aware of all of that. We're going to continue our discussion about what's going on in Springfield, and if there's speaking of chilly, if there's prospects for a thaw going on in Springfield. And joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Representative Steve Anderson. He's a Republican from Geneva, and he is the newly named floor leader of the Illinois House Republicans. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Maybe you want to explain to everybody what the floor leader does.
What a floor leader is. Yeah, it's something that most people aren't aware of, that it even exists. Everybody knows what a Speaker of the House is, or maybe a minority leader, but what's a floor leader? Floor leader's job, in my case, is to be the point person for all debate for the Illinois House Republicans. So if you imagine any Democratic bill that comes up, my job as the floor leader is to coordinate that debate and usually to speak to the bill first. So it's one of the more difficult jobs on the House floor that I've seen, which is that you have to be aware at any given moment of hundreds of bills that could pop up because we don't know the schedule. You know, the Democrats do not share with us what bill is going to be called on a given day.
So you have plenty of throat lozenges stored up for all of this debate, because there will be plenty of debate.
Indeed. Historically, the floor leader, like I said, leads that debate and usually is the focal point. A lot of times I think floor leaders view themselves as being the target for all the Democrat arrows that are going to fly, and I might unleash a few myself their way. So.
Oh, there will be plenty of arrows going back and forth in that chamber. There's no doubt about it.
Indeed.
I want to ask you about the decision by Attorney General Lisa Madigan on Thursday evening to, we spoke with Greg Bays about this, the issue of going to court to lift the St. Clair County court order that requires state employees to be paid. And along with that is the fact that starting this week, too, is that you have AFSCME, the Council 31, the state's largest public employees union, is conducting a strike authorization vote. One I'm wondering is just what your view is of what Lisa Madigan is doing and right. How that affects the dynamics.
Well, certainly it's going, if the stay is lifted and the employees no longer are paid, it's certainly going to change the dynamic. It's going to create an added pressure to the already huge pressures that we have to get a deal done. Some can argue that that's good. Some can argue that that's bad. I'm personally not in favor of putting even more people at risk, even more families and their incomes at risk than we already have done. So I commend the governor, quite frankly, for resisting that and indicating that we will resist that to the extent possible. We Illinois Republicans don't want to see state employees not be paid. At the same time, I wonder about the timing, because as you noted, there's really a confluence of two things going on. There's the strike vote that's pending, and now suddenly the Attorney General, after 2 years, decides to challenge this. She could have done that at any point. I think I saw a comment from her stating, well, she didn't feel like with the advent of the 100th General Assembly that we should wait any longer. I really question, why was she waiting at all? If she felt that law was not being enforced, then what was she waiting for? If I were to be more cynical, I might
think, please.
I might think that it obviates the need for the strike vote. In other words, instead of the AFSCME employees going out on their own volition, now they're, in a sense, kicked out. So perhaps the Democrats can then use that and say, look, it's the governor's fault. They didn't strike. They got tossed out because of the lack of a budget. And, of course, the Democrats will argue that that's entirely the governor's fault. I would strongly disagree with that characterization, but I'm wondering if that isn't part of the play here.
When we go past motivations,
sure,
to the fact that basically, the Attorney General says February 28th is the D-Day.
Right.
Is that enough to move everybody?
It could be. It could be. We have so many pressures right now. For me personally, the impact that we've had on the social services in the state of Illinois is enough of a crisis for me to be at the table. Unfortunately, I'm not one of the four leaders that are running that negotiation, but it certainly, I think, has brought the great majority of us to a willingness and a recognition that we need to get the job done. I mean, it's not acceptable to continue to leave our state hanging. And like I said, to leave our social services, our higher ed, all these programs in literal limbo. And it does nothing for the state of Illinois business climate to have a state that's unpredictable. So we are certainly in a place, and adding this fuel to the fire will certainly increase that pressure.
I get the sense from talking rank and file, and it's both sides,
right,
is that, you know, 18, 19 months without a budget, that just the level of frustration and the accusations that you're not doing your job are just kind of getting to a breaking point as well.
Sure. And that's appropriate pressure, by the way. Pressure on all members of the House and the Senate, the accusation that we're not doing our job by our constituents. That's what our constituents should be doing, is screaming and complaining that we're not doing it, because that's the only thing that we ultimately listen to, is, or we should be listening to, is our constituents' wishes. So definitely we're at that point, and I would argue we're way past that point.
What do you think, without getting into a lot of specifics necessarily,
sure,
because who knows what may happen, but the fact that you do have Senate President Cullerton and Republican Senate Leader Redonio trying to put together a package?
There's two parts to it. Part number one is I'm thrilled that they're talking. And I'm thrilled that they're talking about everything. It's not just about the line items of the budget, as Speaker Madigan would argue is the only thing we should be talking about. They're talking about everything that everybody has an interest in resolving. Whether you agree with some of the items or not, they're communicating, and they're actually proposing things. That's wonderful. And the governor in his State of the State speech highlighted that, and I couldn't agree with him more. That's the best thing going right now, is that communication.
Speaking of that, I want to play this cut from the State of the State speech. And this is the governor urging work on that compromise.
He is off to a fast start. His cabinet consists of smart, experienced.
That was, I'm sorry, I misnumbered the cuts. So that was.
That didn't sound like
No, that did not sound like the governor, because there you could hear the G's at the end. That was what it was. It was cut number 8, but is that he was talking about the state Senate,
right,
and encouraging them to continue work.
Thank you. Thank you for working so hard to try to come together on a bipartisan basis to find a compromise, to get a truly balanced budget with changes to the system to help job creators and protect taxpayers. We all know this is very, very difficult. There's a lot of arrows. Please don't give up. Please keep working. Please keep trying. The people of Illinois need you to succeed.
And that's Governor Rauner from the State of the State address. We're speaking with Republican representative from Geneva, Representative Steve Anderson. He's the new Illinois House Republican floor leader. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Republican Representative Steve Anderson from Geneva, the House Republican floor leader, and also the leader of the Bacon Caucus.
Indeed. 2 years ago, when the World Health Organization labeled bacon as a Class 1 carcinogen, similar to cigarettes, I kind of got upset And so I created the Defense of Bacon Act. Now, it went nowhere. However, the huge amount of support and co-sponsors I got created for the first time the Illinois Bacon Caucus.
And a good sense of collegiality.
Indeed, on both sides.
Which is something badly needed in Springfield.
My good friend, Representative Greg Harris, on the other side, is my chief co-sponsor and co-chair of the Bacon Caucus.
See, we can agree on some things
in Springfield.
Well, I did play before the break that cut from Governor Rauner, who actually went off script in his State of the State address to reach out and praise the Senate and urge them to continue working on this very complicated package that they're trying to use to break the logjam. And you heard Greg Bays on earlier, kind of, I'm paraphrasing, that he thinks some of these Republicans in the Senate and probably in the House, too, need to have maybe a better guidepost on what he would support in order to be able to, for Republicans to vote for some of these things.
Certainly. The package has 13 bills in it. They're all tied together.
And that's another thing, too, is and you can't have one pass and one fail. They all have to pass to take effect.
Right. So if they
don't, 13 roll calls.
13 all in, so to speak. And there's some good in there, and there's a lot to hate, quite frankly, as well. I think probably from both sides of the aisle. And so the difficulty, I would imagine, for the Senate Republicans is, do they really want to vote their switch and, you know, vote in favor of, for example, a tax increase to, number one, not know where the governor is at with it? I know he's supportive of the negotiations, but I don't know his view of the particulars in the 13 bills. But also, they don't know presently whether or not the Speaker of the House will ever call the bill. And from my perspective, that's a huge problem, because under the rules of the House, which we just got done debating last week, if the Speaker doesn't want to call it, it never sees the light of day. So do my colleagues in the Senate, at least on the Republican side, do they want to be on the record for a tax increase that may never, ever even have been debated in the House?
Sure, and politically be left hanging out there without any kind of follow-through.
Yeah, I mean, it's bold, but that's tough.
And as I mentioned to Greg Bays as well, the fact, as Republicans, there is no budget component in this to be able to identify specific cuts that you're making in exchange for these tax increases.
That's a huge gap in this quote-unquote grand bargain. You know, when I looked through all 13 bills and 103 pages of analysis, not even getting to the bills itself, that was something that I was looking for, is where do we actually see some cuts? Where do we see some increased efficiencies in government? You won't find it because it's not in there. And that is a problem.
I mean, it just seems there's a disconnect there. And that's not to say that, you know, there won't be good faith efforts at cuts in a full year budget for the next fiscal year that starts July 1st. But that's down the road, and that's subject to further negotiations.
Indeed. And I think right now the difficulty is that, and it's very unfortunate to say this, but the trust level is not great on either side of the aisle.
I think you're overstating that when you say not great.
Not great. And actually, that's one thing I'm hoping to bring as floor leader now, is a lot of times the floor leader role can be a bit of a bombast, if you will, lobbing bombs.
It's an attack dog.
Yeah. People who know me know that I have a fairly calm demeanor, professional. I'm an attorney by trade. I'm going to challenge them on anything that's inappropriate. But I think a civil discourse is what we need, not bombast. And so my hope is...
That's something new for politics these days, a civil discourse?
Well, if you think that politics has functioned well, then we should keep on that course. I think most people find that politics has not functioned very well of late.
No,
how about we try a different course?
And I know I'm being a little snarky, but I don't mean it that way. But truly, and I've talked about it on the show, you know, how that sense of responsibility and effort to compromise has been taken away by sticking to your guns. You know, I'm not going to surrender my principles, and everything is about, I mean, in some respects, it was always about the next election. We all know that. Mm-hmm. But truly, it's about painting enemies and painting attacks and not about governing.
And that isn't that really what's wrong, is that if we paint our opponents as enemies, that word is very specific, enemies. How do you compromise with your enemy? I don't know that you can as easily as you can compromise with the person who in good faith is your opponent, who disagrees with you. Enemies, you know, a very strong word, and I do think people view it that way, and that they believe that it's a polar choice, either yes or no, all or nothing, black or white. And the reality is that's not the way it needs to be, and there's plenty of room for compromise in the middle without compromising your core principles. And that's what I hope we'll be able to remind everyone about in the legislature, is that's possible. That does happen.
Well, as you mentioned with this Senate package about how there's something to hate for both sides.
Indeed.
Some people argue, well, now you're talking compromise.
Indeed.
And I mean, there are varying levels here on each side, but certainly are Republicans in the House prepared to have to cast votes on some of these difficult votes if the bill or something like it, as Senate President Cullerton says, you know, you may not like this, but this is basically the template of what we're going to have to do to get out of this mess.
The a phrase I like to use is the definition of a good deal is one that nobody likes, neither side likes. That means that everybody put enough on the table, so to speak. This is an example of that. I don't know that it goes far enough from my perspective to vote in favor of it. Like I said, there's a lot of missing pieces here, but at the same time, your question, are we in a position where we're ready to vote on something?
Well, I mean, Greg Bays was talking about mm-hmm. the day of reckoning.
Right.
Appears to be here.
Past due, honestly. Yeah, the House Republicans are ready to negotiate. Our leader, Jim Durkin, is absolutely ready. At the drop of a hat, if I texted him now, he'd be doing it if I said there was an opportunity.
You'd be waking him up. I know, Jim.
I'm sure he's listening right now. Along with my other colleagues, freshman, sophomore, my friend Grant Worley has been a strong advocate on property taxes. He's ready to work on that. And, you know, there are things that we all can look at and say, we don't like pieces of this, but ultimately, are we ready to negotiate, try to make it better? But will it be everything that we want? No, that's not a compromise. So we're going to have to talk about some things we don't like, too.
Very quickly, one element that still is kind of left outstanding in this package of 13 bills is school funding.
True.
And obviously always a touchy subject when it affects suburban schools.
Well, hopefully it's touchy for anybody's schools.
Well, but I mean, but particularly schools in the suburbs that do financially well based on their own property taxes. They don't do well from state funding.
Right.
And, you know, this has been a decades-long discussion, and people are curious whether the governor's task force, is that ultimately going to be another one of those reports that gets thrown on a desk at the State Board of Education, never to be see the light of day?
Well, I don't know about the light of day. I think the reports can be valuable in guiding us. I think there is actually a debate on that task force itself, whether or not it's going to turn into a bill or whether it is going to be a report that we can learn from. The thing about it is Senate Bill 1 of the package actually is the shell bill, if you will, for that concept. But it's not fleshed out yet, so we really don't know what form it's going to take. That by itself should probably be a two-year debate. It's difficult to imagine that we could reform that in a matter of days or weeks, let alone the other 12 components of this. This is a really big lift. I don't know if it's wise to include the education formula in this deal. I understand the desire for it. I want to reform that. My district, for example, one of the towns I represent, Geneva, 92% of its funding is local property taxes, and 8% from the state. Would I like to see that reformed? Yes, I would. It's an overburden on the property taxes. That's something that we need to deal with. But again, can we do that in the short time we have to deal with the budget? I don't know.
We'll be watching Representative Anderson debating from the floor these subjects in the weeks and months ahead. Indeed. Representative Steve Anderson, a Republican from Geneva, House Republican floor leader, thank you so much for joining me here in studio this morning.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
We'll be back with more right after this.